Yet there is nothing cheap or sordid about Rousseau. He deals with intimate experiences with such passion, tenderness, and seriousness that the overall effect is to heighten our fascination. Generations of critics have denounced Rousseau as self-indulgent, disgusting, and perverted. They have noted that he fathered several children out of wedlock and then abandoned them to an orphanage. Rousseau can be seen as the original deadbeat dad. But none of these criticisms has diminished Rousseau's appeal. Rousseau's answer to them is something like the following: if I am not worth as much as you are, at least I am different. I may not be as virtuous, but I am my own person. You may not like my self-description, but you have to credit me with giving an honest account of myself. You may find me unappealing, but at least I am sincere. Finally, if I have not lived an irreproachable life, I am a well-meaning and a good person, and I care. The reader may recognize in this portrait the moral code of a certain American ex-president. To understand why Rousseau's ideas are so controversial, to see why their consolidation in the 1960s and 70s continues to torment and divide Americans, it is helpful to contrast Rousseau's Confessions with another book of the same title, The Confessions of Saint Augustine. Augustine, of course, was one of the early church fathers, and at first glance his account of morality seems to be quite similar to that of Rousseau. I entered into the depths of my soul, Augustine writes, and with the eye of my soul I saw the light that never changes, casting its rays over me. In Augustine's view, God is not to be found out there, but within our hearts. God is the interior light that powers our souls. Both Augustine and Rousseau counsel inwardness as the means to truth. Rousseau's innovation is to cut off this quest from any external source of authority, including that of God. For Rousseau, the self defines what is good. The inner light is the final arbiter of how I should live my life. Augustine, by contrast, presumed that the inward journey is merely the pathway to the Creator. The inner light is controlled by an outer source, and that is God. Another way to put it is Augustine presumes that there is a moral order in the universe that is separate from us and that makes claims on us. The existence of such an order was taken for granted by virtually all the great thinkers of the ancient world, Christian and non-Christian, Western and non-Western, believers as well as atheists. Its laws were considered no less valid than, say, the laws governing the motion of the tides and the planets. In America, of course, the moral order was represented by Christianity. Intellectuals have been rebelling against the Christian order for several centuries. But I think it is fair to say that until the 1950s, the era of the Greatest Generation, the Christian paradigm held firm in America. It had been modified over time to take into account the multiplicity of Christian denominations, as well as the presence of Jews, hence the attempt at forging a Judeo-Christian synthesis. Despite these accommodations, the vast majority of Americans in the 1950s thought for human beings in general, there was a right way to live and a wrong way to live, and they were pretty confident that they knew the difference between the two. There was a whole moral framework that this group took for granted. What changed in the 1960s in America is the collapse of this framework, the erosion of belief in this external order. For the first time, many people, especially young people, began to find the external rules arbitrary, senseless, and oppressive. The counterculture did not reject morality, it was passionately concerned with morality. But it substituted Rousseau's conception of the inner compass for the old rules of obligation. Getting in touch with one's feelings and being true to oneself were now more important than conforming to the pre-existing moral consensus of society. By embracing the new morality, the children of the 1960s became incomprehensible to their parents. And as this new generation inherited the reins of power, its ethos entered the mainstream. As a consequence of this change, America became a different country. The magnitude of the change is evident when we consider the philosophical presuppositions of the old morality and the new morality. The old morality was based on the premise that human nature is flawed. Since human beings are inclined to do bad things, consulting the inner self becomes a very misguided thing to do. The self is the enemy. The self is under the sway of the passions. The self must be overcome. The wayward passions must be ruled by the mind or brought to submission by the will. Through reason or revelation, human beings acquire knowledge of the external order. Conformity to that order is the measure of how good a person you are. And the institutions of society should be devised in such a way as to steer flawed or sinful human beings away from temptation and to keep them on the straight path. Rousseau turns this paradigm upside down. For him, human nature is basically good. It is society that corrupts man. The means of this corruption is reason, which is deployed to enable one man to advance above another, to accumulate more than the other, to appear good in the eyes of everybody. Since reason has become an instrument of sordid calculation, it is the enemy of morality and truth. In order to discover what is good and true, we must set aside reason and be in touch with our feelings. This is the romantic element in Rousseau. According to him, feelings never lie because they speak with the voice of nature itself. By listening to that inner voice and following it, we can rise above the corruptions and compromises that society seeks from us, and we can recover our natural goodness. The triumph of Rousseau's worldview gives rise to a new set of problems that could not have arisen under the old order. In earlier eras, people didn't have identity crises because their moral identity was supplied by the ethical framework that they all took for granted. This ethical framework might emphasize different virtues in different times or places. Thus, one society emphasizes the warrior ethic, another the ascetic life, a third the life of production and the family. The challenge that people faced was one of living up to the moral order. The Spartan soldier might have wondered whether he was courageous enough not to retreat in the face of certain death. The medieval Christian monk might have doubted his ability to live by the Benedictine rule. Undoubtedly, there were members of the greatest generation who struggled to conform to the demands imposed on them by the regnant code, to remain faithful to their wives, go to church on Sunday, show up for battle when drafted, and so on. But in each case, some external framework remained in place and provided an unquestioned standard by which human action was judged. In Rousseau's New World, however, the external framework ceases to be authoritative for the whole society. A person can, of course, join the Marines and embrace the military code or become a Muslim and follow the Islamic regimen. But now it is the individual's act of choosing that is important. No one sees it as obvious that the military life or the Islamic life is the best or highest calling. Most people's reaction is, well, if it works for you. And well, if you're happy. In other words, each person must select his or her priorities and moral commitments in a society where other people are sure to choose differently, and in which there are obvious trade-offs to be made. In Rousseau's world, moral identity is a problem because it is not given. It is self-generated. Authenticity and self-fulfillment represent an ongoing pursuit, and there is constant anxiety from the knowledge that this pursuit can fail. A person who feels inwardly directed to be an artist might, for various reasons, take a job in banking and spend the rest of his life feeling that he has betrayed his true calling, that he has sold out. Moreover, even commitments that are satisfying at a given time can lose their hold on us. When this happens to the whole moral outlook we have chosen, the result is utter confusion, a crisis of identity. An identity crisis is what happens to you when a set of commitments that once seemed right no longer make sense to you. Suddenly you are cut adrift. You have lost your horizon. You no longer know who you are.